Richard Herring!
Thank you. I deserve that, thank you. Hello and welcome to another episode of Twitutin!
Twitutin!
If you had a time machine, which period of history would you choose to visit? Back to ancient Rome to see Nero fiddling as Rome burned, or would you leave Nero to fiddle in private? Back to 1939 to assassinate Hitler, and whilst you were there, perform a greater service by smothering the infant Ron Atkinson in his cot. Who's the bigger fascist? It's Hitler. Oh. Or would you be like Michael J. Fox and go back to 1955 so you could spy on your mum undressing and nearly get off? A perverted misuse of time travel. Use your time machine like any normal bloke to capture Billy Piper, then keep her locked inside while you fiddle away to your heart's content. Then pretend you've regenerated into someone else so your mate can have a go. But in a way, that was then, this is now, is a kind of time machine. But quite a rubbish one that can only travel back to things that happened this week in history. And that's using travel back to in the very loosest meaning of the words, where travel back to means do some quite weak comedy sketches about. But until someone invents a real time machine, this is the best we're going to get. So we'll just have to imagine spying on our teenage mothers undressing. And before you young kids listening start saying, yeah, you can try and make history seem cool by mentioning Doctor Who as much as you like, because Doctor Who is cool. And yeah, if there were Daleks and Cybermen and Billy Piper in history, then maybe we'd be interested. But there aren't, so we're not in it. Do I look bothered? Yeah, but no but. Well, let me just point out, we have a real rock and roll band on the show. It's Christian Riley and the Cato Street Conspirators.
That was then, this is now. Presented by a man who clearly wants to spy upon his own teenage mother undressing.
I don't.
You do?
Well, we all do a bit, don't we?
No.
Yeah, we do, don't we, fellas? If we're rock and roll, hey, fellas?
It really is. Spying on your mum undressing, that's tragic, mate.
I don't want to spy on her now. She's all old and wrinkly. But, you know, when she was about 15... I mean, 17, I'm not a pervert.
You're wrong in the head, pal.
It's not a sexual thing. I only want to watch her undressing. I'm no Oedipus. He so loved his mother that he killed his dad and made love to her. Most mums prefer it if you just help round the house a bit. Flowers on Mother's Day.
That was then, this is now, a field day for Freudians.
So let's have a look at some of the news from this week. The 7th of September was a big day for the Tudors. In 1533, it saw the birth of Queen Elizabeth I, the Virgin Queen, the first monarch to accept corporate sponsorship, to be followed later by William of Orange and Pope Bonyface of T-Mobile. But 15 years later, to the very day, the Tudors were in mourning when one of Elizabeth's many stepmothers, Catherine Parr, died. Parr was Henry's 6th wife, and for me the most admirable. To marry Henry, knowing his track record of wife murder, took some chutzpah. That must have been quite an embarrassing first date.
And my hobbies are making tapestries and playing real tennis, not imaginary tennis like some people. I like real, actual tennis. But look at me, chatting away. You haven't told me anything about you.
Well, there's not much to say.
What do you do?
I'm king of all England.
Oh, that's interesting. What does that involve?
Oh, you know, kingly duties, ruling over people, dissolving monasteries. Not literally, of course. I don't put monasteries in acid until they literally dissolve.
Oh, I love a man with a sense of humour.
Are you mocking me?
No. No, I thought it was an amusing pun based around the two meanings of dissolving.
Oh, good, good, good.
So, what else? Have you ever been married?
Yeah, a couple of times.
Really?
Well, five other times.
Five times?
Yeah, but it's not as bad as it sounds. Three of them died.
Oh, no.
Jane giving birth to my boy Eddie.
Oh, you poor man. What happened to the others?
Yeah, but there was sort of a couple of accidents. One involving an axe and her neck.
Oh, how awful. And the other one?
Yeah, that also involved an axe and her neck. It's an amazing coincidence. I mean, what are the chances?
I'm not sure it's a good idea for us to keep seeing each other. It's not you. Well, actually it is. You and the axe neck thing.
No, look, there's kind of a pattern to this. It goes divorced, beheaded, died. Divorced, beheaded. So the chances are you won't get beheaded. It would break the chain, because divorced, beheaded, died, divorced, beheaded, beheaded, it just doesn't scan.
Yes, but if it follows the pattern, then I will die.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe something else will happen to you that rhymes with died. You could get fried.
Oh, my.
No, or something good. It could be divorced, beheaded, died, divorced, beheaded, lied, like all the others, the cow, so I cut off her head.
Oh, dear, is that the time? I think I should...
All right. I've chopped off two of my wife's heads. So what? I've dared to do what most men only dream of. But I'm quite a nice bloke, really. Remember, I've only beheaded 2/5 of my wives. The laws of probability are on your side. And if your head remains unchopped off, you're likely to outlive me. You're 31, I'm 52, and I'm not a very well man. I'm extremely rich, you know, owning England like I do.
Really? Well, I do like older men.
Have you been married before?
Oh, only twice. I married Lord Borough when I was a teenager, when he was in his 60s. Sadly, he died. Then I married Lord Latimer, and then he died earlier this year. So, look, why don't you drink down that port I bought you? No, I don't want any. It's all for you. It's good for you.
Doesn't it give you gout?
No, it cures gout. But only if you drink a lot.
Of course, Catherine actually survived her axe-wielding husband and went on to marry a fourth time, becoming the most married queen of England. Only three more and you can beat her, Camilla. Come on, you can do it.
This is now advising the royal family to commit adultery as if they needed any encouragement.
A new section of the show that I like to call What Would You Do?
What would you do? What would you do? What would you do?
Yes, and this week on What Would You Do? The Great Fire of London. The Great Fire of London broke out on the 5th of September 1666 in Pudding Lane. So we're asking, what would you do if you'd been there when the Great Fire of London broke out?
What would you do? What would you do? What would you do?
And there's a prize of £5 and a box of matches for anyone who gets the correct answer. Christian, what would be the first thing you would have done if you had been there?
I reckon I would call the fire brigade.
You idiot. They didn't even have the fire brigade. Check on, Christian, you am a twat. To them, the words London's burning simply meant London was burning. TV's Emma Kennedy, what would you do?
I don't know.
Think, woman, think.
Oh, I'd probably run away, perhaps stopping to gather up a tiny crying child.
Incorrect, and a typically sentimentally mawkish response from you. You mawkish harpy, you harpo-mawk. Well, let's go into the audience and ask what they would do.
What would they do?
Right, so what would you do if the Great Fire of London broke out, do you think?
Look for a river.
Look for a river? There's the Thames. It's quite nearby. Then what would you do when you found a river?
Stay in it.
What would you do if the Great Fire of London broke out?
Go and find my family.
Ah, oh, mawkish. Why aren't you with your family? What are you doing? What are you doing without your family? Are I away having some kind of affair? You make me sick. I don't think anyone's going to get it, so I'll have to tell you. The first thing you have to do if the Great Fire of London breaks out is to bury your cheese. Yeah, I know a lot of you were thinking that. It was on the tip of your tongue. But that is what the famous diarist Samuel Pepys truly immediately did. He buried his Parmesan in his garden. That's the first thing that occurred to him.
Oh, look, Samuel. The Great Fire of London has broken out.
Yeah, sure it has. Well, better bury my Parmesan in the garden, then.
Yes, you had. We wouldn't want our Parmesan getting all burned, would we? Yeah. Burying it in some mud would be the safest way to stop it catching on fire.
Yes, I'll get my spade. Mm.
Do you want to put anything else in the hole? Maybe some of our oil paintings or expensive crockery or money?
Don't be ridiculous. If we got all that stuff together, there wouldn't be time to save the Parmesan. I must make haste, woman.
Maybe you'd like to save that diary you're always scribbling away at.
Put a diary in the ground? In the mud and dirt, it'll be completely ruined. Let it burn, I say. The cheese must be saved.
Yes, but first you want to go upstairs and wake our children and spirit them to safety.
There's no time, darling. We can have more children, but where will we get more cheese? Where? Hmm? Bury it. Bury the cheese.
It's all right. The cheese is buried. And the fire is still some distance away. Shall we save some other stuff now?
No, woman, no. The cheese is safe now. In the mud. Let's keep it there always, from now on, so we don't have a scare like that again. Come on. Let's get to bed.
Alas, Pepys never says why the Parmesan was so important to him, or why he thought a hole in the ground would be the best place to keep it safe. Did he just really hate melty cheese? Or did the world's fourth favourite diarist, after Jones, Mole and Frank, in that order, secretly like dirty, muddy cheese and realise he'd finally found a way of achieving his perverted, cheesy ends?
That was then, this is now. History in the mocking. Mocking.
The 3rd of September, 1651, saw the end of the English Civil War when Cromwell defeated Royalist troops at Worcester. And Cromwell himself died 7 years later to the very day. Oliver Cromwell was famous for three things. Three. Only three. The first was chopping off a king's head. The second was the massacring of the Irish. They still bear a bit of a grudge about that. And the third was insisting that his portrait had warts on it.
My Lord Protector, your portrait is finished.
Aye, good. And you remembered what I said about my warts?
Yes.
Warts and all, that's what I said. Paint me warts and all. That's what I, Oliver Cromwell, Lord Protector of England, said, and will be remembered for.
Not the Irish thing.
No, definitely not the Irish thing, no.
Right.
So, did you paint me, warts and all, to show that I'm not a vain man, but as God made me?
Yep, here we are, warts all in place.
Excellent.
I mean, I could put some more warts on, if you like. I mean, wart it up a bit, if it is the warts you're particularly hankering
for. No, the number of warts on the painting should tally exactly with the number of warts on my actual face. That is the sort of honesty and lack of vanity I wish to be remembered for, and not the unfortunate Irish thing.
Yes. Well, it's your portrait.
Oh, yes. I'm very pleased with it. Just one little thing.
What, perhaps a boil? Hairy mole?
No. It was lower down than the face I was looking at.
Double chin?
No, further down, around the, downstairs.
Genital warts?
No. No! I'm a Puritan. I wouldn't even know what they are. No. I just want you to, make my placket look bigger. Oliver Cromwell. Oh, come on. I'm the father of Parliament. Just a little bit extra on the little Lord Protector. No one would know.
Well, that's not very honest and lacking in vanity, is it?
Oh, it is honest. It's normally bigger than this. It's just very cold in your studio.
It isn't. It's boiling.
Well, I'm nervous about what people might think just remembering me for being all warty.
Oh, you little liar.
Oh, look, just paint me with a massive wanger, or people will only remember me for the warts and the unfortunate Irish thing. Oh, you'd better do it. I've killed a bloomin' king, so one little artist isn't going to trouble me.
All right, I'll do it. Just one thing, roundhead or cavalier?
Time for your song. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for Christian Riley and the Cato Street Conspirators.
Thank you very much. Now, this week in history marks the end of the Roman Empire. After 1,229 years, 4 months and 14 days, there were 90 Roman emperors, and how will we remember them all, I hear you thinking? Well, I've made it very easy for you. There's a very easy song. Here we go. Augustus, Tiberius, Caligula and Claudius. Nero was no hero while Rome was on fire. Then there was Galba and Otho, Vitellius and his Oppo, Vespasian who shared power in 69. Then there's Titus and Domitian, who must have caused some friction because he was assassinated in 96. Then Nerva and Trajan and a bricky called Hadrian. Antoninus Pius and Marcus Aurelius. Bass. Lucius Verus ruled next to Marcus. Power sharing Marcus had a zest for. He did it later with Commodus, whose self-defense was bogus as he discovered when strangled by a wrestler. Next in history, it's the Severan dynasty. Pertinax got the axe in 193. Didius, Septimius, Caracalla, Macrinus, and don't forget Geta in between.
Diadumenian was put to death, and then here comes Elagabalus. But he was assassinated just like his replacement, Alexander Severus. Maximinus Thrax, Gordians 1 and 2, Papinius Maximus and Balbinus, who were both murdered by Praetorians, and then a third Gordian got replaced by Philip the Arab after he was killed too. Dicius Aurelius, Eva Lucianus, Hostilian and Gallus circa 253, Aemilian, Gallienus, Valerian, Saloninus takes us up to the year 260. Posthumus Marius, Victorianus Tetricus ruled the Gallic Empire, while Claudius was Illyrian, like Quintilius and Aurelian, like Tacitus took over in 275. Then it's Florianus, Probus and Carus, killed by lightning, but there's some debate. Then Carinus with Numerian, Diocletian with Maximian, and those last two had to abdicate. Constantius Chorus, Severus II Galerius, Maximian makes a comeback round 308. Licinius shed power with Maximinus Dyer. Maxentius was drowned by Constantine the Great. It's Valerius Valens, Martianus, and then Constantine and Constantius, both II. Constans was slain and Julian was apostate and Jovian accidentally died. In other news, the Britannic Empire was kind of short-lived. Carausius and Electus, and that's all there is. Valen! Senni ruled the west, Valens ruled the east, Gratian was assassinated in 383, Valentinian II was deposed in 392 and replaced by Honorinus in 393. Magnus Maximus, usurper most mischievous, Theodosius recognized in 383, but 5 years in the future he gets deposed and executed, and Arcadius rules the east eventually. Constantius Valentinian, both Mark III, Petronius Maximus meets a lynch party. Avitus Majorium, this is getting boring, and Livius Severus doesn't rhyme with anything. Athemius Alibrius, a chap called Glycerius, is seen in 474. Julius deposed, he got deposed, and like the Western Empire, I'm about to fall. Finally, Romulus Augustus was forced to abstain by his own mercenaries in September 476. I've left out the odd pretender. History won't recognize. Keep your Priscus, Attalus, Jovinus, Sebastianus, and don't get me started on the Byzantines. Acta es fabula. Ave.
That was dangerously close to being genuinely educational. September the 9th, 1087, William the Conqueror, one of the fattest kings of all time, died as a result of some genuine French taunting. This is what really happened.
That was then, this is now.
What really happened?
No. This is what really happened. We use the really happened sting when we're making up some rubbish comedic version of history, but this is what really happened.
Oh, okay.
1, 2, 3, 4.
That was then, this is now.
What really happened?
That's better.
Fat King William the Conqueror was known all over Europe for his morbid obesity. His enemy, Philip I of France, loved to mock the massive monarch.
Have you seen the state of William the Conqueror? When will this fat man be delivered of a child?
Oh, very funny.
Yes, it is no wonder that the French sense of humour is so loved around the world.
Oh, yes. It was implied that William was pregnant. Oh, it's priceless.
But news of the insult got back to William.
Who said what? How dare he?
The copious king immediately jumped on his horse and set off to Paris, furiously trying to come up with a retort.
No, no. No, you're the one who is with child. No, 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 no. Well, I might be fat, but you're drunk, and whilst you'll be sober in the morning, that doesn't work. You want to know why I'm so fat, Philip the First? Because every time I make love to your mother, Princess Anne of Kiev, she gives me a biscuit. Yes, that's the one.
He was so wrapped up in his comedy comeback that he failed to control his horse and it stumbled into a ditch. William was thrown forward and impaled on his pommel, the last thing you want to land on.
Oh, I landed on my pommel. Oh, I think I've burst my bowels. Oh, yeah. Ah, yeah, if I was that fat, then surely my stomach would have padded me. So, looks like I'm not so fat after all. Take that, King Philip the First. Zing! Yeah, perfect comeback. Now I think I'll slowly die over the next few days in terrible agony.
And that's what really happened.
I still say it's funnier when you make stuff up.
I want this programme to be educational, Christian. There is nothing entertaining about education. That sketch was all true, apart from the bit about his mum giving him a biscuit. I don't think William the Conqueror originated that joke. But how did William the Conqueror get to such an enormous size? To find out, please welcome the presenter of the new Channel 4 archaeology show, They Were What They Ate, Dr. Miriam Dalgleish.
Hello, Richard. It's very nice to be here.
Hello. So, They Are What They Ate. Once again, Channel 4 seem to have taken the formats of two successful shows, Time Team and that thing with the woman who looks at your poo, and combined them to make a new aberration which makes Balls of Steel look like quality adult broadcasting rather than what it is, happy slapping with a budget, you know? I never thought I'd look back and think Bo Selector wasn't the worst show in the world.
The Channel 4 execs are very pleased with themselves.
But you are a genuine archaeologist.
Yes, I am. But not just any archaeologist. I'm a specialist coprolite analyst.
What does that mean?
I analyse fossilised stools.
Really? You investigate historical poo?
We prefer the term coprolites.
You're a chutney ferret.
I'm not strange or kinky. I am certainly not aroused by the idea of wading around in the waste matter of long-dead people.
I never thought you were.
Good, because I'm not.
Good.
Some archaeologists specialise in jewellery, others in pottery, but my area of expertise is faecal matter.
Did you choose to work in this area, or did you not really concentrate at college?
No. No, I chose coprolites. I love them. And the contents of ancient cesspools and ditches can tell us all sorts about the diets and lifestyles of people from days gone by.
You're coprolite-ing me.
No, straight up. And I've got the coprolites of some of the most famous figures in history here in these Tupperware boxes.
Tupperware?
Oh, yes, keeps them fresh. Though you have to make sure you don't take the wrong lunchbox if you're staying at my house. I'm joking. This might interest you. This is the coprolite of Samuel Pepys, the famous diarrheaist.
You mean diarist?
I know what I mean.
Gosh, yeah, looking at that, that is pretty loose. That's,
Analysis shows that Pepys existed on a diet of pure Parmesan. Smell how cheesy it is.
Hold on, did you find this in his garden?
Yes.
That's not a coprolite, that is his Parmesan. He must never have dug it up again.
Well, have a look at this one. It belongs to Jean Seymour.
Oh, right, yeah, the wife of Henry VIII.
No, the actress. I collect coprolites of famous people in my spare time just for fun.
You're clearly mad.
There's nothing strange about it. Some people collect autographs, some film posters. I like to collect coprolites of the stars.
All right, this is enough. You're clearly mentally ill. I don't think we should broadcast this.
No, wait, don't you want to see William the Conqueror's coprolite? That's why I'm here.
Oh, God, it stinks.
Well, yes, that's because William the Conqueror's diet was mostly meat and refined carbohydrates.
Oh, hold on a minute. Where did you find this?
In a field. In Hastings. Where William the Conqueror was.
What? William the Conqueror, the King of England, used to spend his time just coprolite-ing willy-nilly in fields? You don't see that in the Bayeux Tapestry.
Yeah. They stitched over that bit. He has to go to the toilet. He's not Jack Bauer.
So you found this on an archaeological dig?
No, I just found it. I was looking for coprolites with my coprolite detector.
Your coprolite detector?
This stick.
So let's get this straight. You were just walking in a field, weren't you? And you found a coprolite.
That's right.
You thought, what? And William Conker's just still lying there 900
it's
years later.
It's a very peaty
field.
And
it's still moist. This is a dog mess, isn't it? Look. There's remains of a bonio still in it.
Oh, fan dubby dozzy! William the Conqueror ate dog biscuits. Oh, that's what killed him. Alert the historians, this is an incredible scoop.
Don't give me that coprolite, Dalgleish. Get out of here and take your coprolite with you.
I'm going. Oh, just one more thing. Could I have one of your coprolites, Richie? Because it's not for me, it's for my nephew.
That's what they all say. Get out of here.
Oh, I'll get what I'm after, Herring. You can't hold it in forever. And you never know which you bend I'll be lurking around.
Did she just flush herself down a toilet, Chris?
I think she did.
I wrote that. Do you think my dad's proud of me? Because he isn't. I'm 39 years old now. That's how I make my living. That's pathetic, isn't it? Yeah. If you want to write in and complain about that, I agree with you. It's rubbish and offensive. You should be upset. But if I had a time machine, I wouldn't travel back to spy on my mum undressing. I'd travel back 10 minutes and stop that sketch ever existing, right? It's too late now. We can't change the past. That's history. Good afternoon.
That was Then, This Is Now was written and performed by Richard Herring, Emma Kennedy, Dan Tetzel, me, Danny Robbins, and Christian Riley and the Cato Street Conspirators, who were Damien Coldwell, Martin Kane, and Charlie Round Turner. It was produced by Mother Liz Anstey at Hammersmith. It was a Cellar Door production for BBC Radio 2.